Good morning, everyone. It being 8:20 and 8:15 passing us 5 minutes ago, even though it starts at the same time every day, we will get started and unofficially bring up House File 737, Representative Peterson. I know you have testifiers who have other places that they need to get to today, so we want to get started with you. If you could please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What you have before you is House File 737, which is a creation of a mental health innovation grant. And I had the privilege this summer and fall to be a part of the governor's mental health task force. I'd been very interested in this topic, and I knew that we're at a state where we're not doing enough to address mental health issues for our constituents and, quite frankly, of my own loved ones and our own family and friends. So I learned a lot serving on the task force, and some of my takeaways include that we're not spending enough money on mental health and certainly not enough to keep up with the demand for services. The money we're spending does not include enough resources for community-based services. And the lengths of stay at the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center and the community behavioral health hospitals have become too long because there's few discharge options available. The counties are paying lots of money for stays in Anoka, and the CBHs that do not meet a hospital level of care, and the money disappears into the general fund. We need more collaboration between stakeholders, and maybe some new funds might help jumpstart the process. So, what does House File 737 do? The bill includes two key initiatives. The first initiative is the creation of a mental health grant program with front-loaded with $10 million in 2018 grants. $5 million for the seven-county metropolitan area and $5 million for the outside the seven-county metro area. DHS will administer the grant application and approval processes, and entities eligible to apply for the grant include a county in Minnesota, a hospital in Minnesota other than those operated by the state, a community mental health center in Minnesota. So a preference for the grant is award is given for project proposals that involve more than one community stakeholder organization. And that's to promote more collaboration. The second part of the bill is reallocating the money the counties currently pay for stays in Anoka and the community behavioral health hospitals that do not need a hospital level of care from the general fund into this grant program. This money needs to stay within our mental health system. The bill calls for establishing a special revenue fund beginning July 1, 2017, with the county payments being redirected. This money is to be used for grant awards made in 2018 for 2019 program execution. And I do have Dr. Gehring, who also served on the Mental Health Task Force with me, to provide some testimony as well.
Welcome to the committee, Dr. Gehring. If you could please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Paul Gehring. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for inviting me. I'm Vice President of Mental Health and Addiction for Alina, and also was able to serve on the Governor's Task Force for Mental Health. In the case of the county share, the task force felt the funds collected could be applied to growing community capacity for mental health and addiction needs, where they would be able to provide the most impact on alleviating patient flow issues at Anoka and the CBHHs.
And Dr. Gehring, could you please move your microphone a little bit closer to you so we can...
My apologies. Thank you.
And it'll move forward for you too if that...
Okay.
Thank you.
The challenges in mental health are well known. The efforts focused on improving the system are robust, and as a result, many investments will need to be made and coordinated for success in the state. One of the struggles we're encountering in trying to build a comprehensive mental health system, one where citizens can access the right level of care at the right time, is that there's no funding source that helps build partnerships and connections between various sites of service. This type of innovation fund could be a game changer by breaking down the silos that exist today. This theme of the silos and the gaps has been perpetual through my entire career of 25 years and it exists between state, counties, and community agencies. That leaves me perpetually asking questions of how does my organization lean in and create part of the solution, and how does my organization combine to provide sort of shared, transparent, mutually accountable services. An example that would be real-time of where these funds would be of service. Currently, we're actively looking for partners in the community to help us solve access issues for step-down services outside of the hospital. It's very difficult to co-create solutions with limited funding that's available. This amount, viewed in isolation, may look like a lot, but compared to the needs of the state's population, it's simply the down payment. Redirecting this from the general fund will reduce the amount that's otherwise needs to be liberated to fund these critical services. We appreciate the opportunity to share our support for this proposal and look forward to the opportunity to work with counties and other partners in identifying areas of partnership in these types of investments and pilots. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Gehring, for your comments this morning. Are there any questions for Dr. Gehring? Seeing none, the committee thanks you for your testimony this morning.
Thank you.
Representative Peterson, do you have any other testifiers?
Well, I don't know if I have any other testifiers, but I do think there's some other people who want to speak to the bill.
All right. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak to House File 737? If you can please make your way down and give us your name and testimony. And while she's making her way down, we do have quorum now, so I will officially call the meeting to order 11 minutes after it was supposed to start. And Representative Peterson officially moves that House File 737 be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
My name is Angela Youngerberg. I am the Director of Business Operations for Blue Earth County. Good morning, Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. I am here today representing MACSA, MICA, and AMC. These three organizations represent county commissioners, administrators, human services directors, and public health associations across the state. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today in order to voice concerns about House File 737 as currently written. While we have some concerns with the bill, we also thank Representative Peterson for her willingness to improve the mental health system. As counties, we know there is significant need in the continuum of care. As the mental health authority, daily, we see the need of those struggling with mental illness. Our home visiting nurses work with families and expecting mothers. We work with students all too often through the child protection system. And our sheriffs are responding to police calls to address mental health crises. And even more unfortunately, we see the growing numbers of people with mental illness housed in county jails. Counties understand the need across the continuum of care and agree with the spirit of this bill, that there needs to be additional funding to build the mental health system in Minnesota. As active participants of the Governor's Task Force on Mental Health, counties from across the state shared growing concerns over the current mental health crisis. We fully recognize the shortage in community support services. We know we need to continue to enhance the already existing community partnerships and promote new community partnerships to ensure that residents are getting the appropriate level of care at the appropriate time. Like the community hospitals who have patients who are stuck in hospital beds with nowhere to go to appropriately address their needs, counties also have people who are stuck in Anoka and in CBHHs in similar situations. Therefore, we share these concerns. We recognize these delays come at cost to hospitals, and we know the financial impact this is having on counties. The cost shifts passed by the legislature in the last 2 years require counties to now pay for 100% of the cost for those at Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center and CBHHs who no longer meet medical criteria but have nowhere to go in the community. At $1,300 and $1,600 a day, respectively, this has devastated county budgets, especially in rural Minnesota. To paint a picture, this is $40,000 to $48,000 per month per person that comes from county spending. There's no way to plan for how long a person might be stuck in a facility with no option for alternative placements. To give a local perspective, Blue Earth County's combined budgets in these two areas have increased 650% in 3 years. Our county workers across the state work diligently to place our residents in the community where they can be successful. However, with a shortfall of community placements, this is exceedingly difficult. counties first and foremost believe that this penalty should be repealed. That being said, we appreciate that the goal of this bill is to address the underlying reason that counties are paying these penalties by designating funds for the development of additional placements in the community. What is concerning for counties is the money used to pay for this build-out of the mental health system comes solely from county dollars. The bill earmarks the county dollars generated from this cost shift as the only funding source. The cost shift, which is currently going to the general fund, has resulted in a property tax burden to Minnesotans in the amount of approximately $24 million annually. We agree with the recommendations of the task force that if this cost shift is to continue, we hope temporarily, that this money should be used for mental health services. We agree there needs to be additional placement options and agree we need community partners to help create those placements. However, we feel there should be input from counties as to where there is the greatest need. Given that counties are the local mental health authority, we are responsible for finding alternative placements. We know the needs of our individual communities and are the financial stewards of these property tax dollars. Counties look forward to continuing conversations this session on how to improve the mental health system in Minnesota, and look forward to continuing to work with Representative Peterson to address these concerns. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak today, and I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Youngerberg, for your testimony this morning. Are there any questions for the testifier? Seeing none, the committee thanks you for your testimony this morning. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify on House File 737? Seeing no one, Representative Peterson, any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Peterson, before that, Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in listening to the county speak about the burden that is on the county to do the work that they know is desperately needed, can you just tell me a little bit about how you came to this as a part of a solution to make things better?
Well,
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Moran, I think that we all recognize that at least a lot of the testimony that we saw in the governor's mental health task force, that there's a lot of things that are broken within the system. And so this seemed like a logical step to try to find some better ways that we can collaborate so we can stop the logjam that tends to be happening where people are in beds in our hospital, but there's no place for them to go. And I'm going to agree with the testimony before that counties play a very important role in that, in trying to find placement for these homes. And that's why, in my opinion, it's going to take all of us working together to collaborate together to find the best solutions and have really individualized solutions for people. Because what might work in one community may not work in another community. What might work for one person may not work for the next person. So that's why it needs to really be everyone working together to find those solutions.
Mr. Chair, so can you tell me a little bit about who collaborated with you to come up with this solution?
Representative Peterson.
Because I know you was on the task force.
Representative Moran.
You was a part of that task force. And there was government, county entities on the task force. And I'm a true believer that those who are on the ground and been impacted by issues are really a big part of the solution. So I'm just trying to get a feel for how you came to this solution.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Moran. Working with the Minnesota Hospitals Association and Dr. Gehring is with the Line of Health, and then obviously counties are part of it too, and we're going to continue to have those conversations not only with the county but also with DHS to implement this program. It's important, I think, that everyone's at the table, and there is some more work that we will be working on, an amendment that are technical in nature, and I think so.
Yeah, Representative Moran.
And so, you know, we are in a crisis state around mental health, and counties are also in a crisis in trying to implement policies that we are passing in this body. And often enough, you know, when we don't do a really good collaborations with those who are has to implement what we want to happen and get the input around the impact, we caused the crisis to be worse, right? And so we have the county paying for this 100%. Money's going to come again from those dollars. And so it's like, if this is, so I'm just trying to think about just how good of a solution this may be for the problem that we are facing. We know there's a strong shortage of community support services, right? We know that is true, you know, but if we, you know, to keep moving the same dollars around in different ways, this is going to have a huge impact on counties. We have a $25 million annual tax burden. I just heard her state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here we are introducing a bill that I'm not sure what the result of that would be. And so, you know, and again, you was on the task force, and I know you guys worked diligently and hard. Was this a recommendation that came from the task force?
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moran. Okay, so right now the $24 million is going into the general fund. So what this bill is saying is that that money should come back into the mental health system to help correct the problem. So that's why it's a better solution than right now that money is just going into the general fund and it's gone. So this is actually bringing it back to the stakeholders so that we can do something better. And yes, this was definitely something that came out of the recommendations from the task force, and we feel that these are one of the few recommendations that we actually can implement that will actually really make a difference. But figuring that out is going to take some resources, and that's why we want to keep that money that the counties are already paying into this process.
Representative Moran.
And so the hope is to make things better. So these dollars that come back into the mental health, so you have mental health professionals, county and others, hospital associations come together to try to figure out what that better is.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moran, that is correct.
Representative Cleveland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a co-author on the bill, and you know this is really a huge problem facing the state. You know, if Congress takes away a lot of our health care funds, it's going to be an even worse problem. And you know, and of course, that could happen any time. None of us know, but I commend Representative Peterson for working on this, because this is just one, you know. This is kind of one of the big pieces we're going to have to be working on through this session. And, you know, the way you do that is you put something forward and then you see what, you know, let people come forward and help you work on it. And, you know, I think there's some hope here because, you know, surely we want to have a sustainable system. If we're putting it all on property taxes and making counties do that, it is not sustainable. So I just want to, you know, we know that this is not perfect, and I just hope that everybody who will be impacted or who is impacted will just come forward and work with you, Representative Peterson, because, you know, it would really be in everybody's interest to see us figure this out by the end of the session. I know it's a heavy lift, so thank you.
Representative Sandstead.
I just want to, Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, I just wanted to say thank you as well for taking this on and carrying it forward, and especially dedicating those funds back to the issue rather than having it go into the general fund. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Final word, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you, Representative Liebling, for also being a co-author on this bill. This has a bipartisan effort, and also Representative Clark Johnson also served on the Mental Health Task Force, and he is also a co-author on the bill. So just a couple of closing comments. There's a lot of good work that can be done with this grant money, and the criteria was written fairly loosely, but I do think a priority should be given to partnerships aimed at increasing discharge options. By encouraging partnerships between counties, the hospitals, and the community mental health centers, the grant dollars will go farther and access to services shall be enhanced, and I ask for your support.
With that, Representative Peterson renews her motion on House File 737 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion is adopted and the House File 737 is re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Thank you, Representative Peterson. Next, we have House File 155 by Representative Grunhagen. Representative Grunhagen moves that House File 155 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. While he is making his way up, Representative Olson moves that we approve the minutes from Health and Human Service Reform Committee from February 7th, 2017. Are there any additions, corrections, or changes that need to be made to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the minutes from February 7th, 2017, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The minutes from February 7th, 2017 are adopted. Representative Grunhagen, to your bill.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Yeah, I'd like to get the bill in the order I would have it, and that so I would move the A1 amendment, which is a technical amendment just further defining what is tax deductible.
And members, it looks like the A1 amendment is being handed out. It was in the packets originally when we were going to bring this up on Monday and has been posted since the posting deadline earlier this week. Any questions to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Grunhagen, to your bill.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, basically what the bill attempts to do is to allow state income tax deductions on individual health insurance policies, both for the premium and also for qualified out-of-pocket medical expenses. You know, members, we have long given preferential tax treatment, state and federal, to group insurance.
That's good.
And it allows people to pre-tax, even to pay some of their out-of-pocket medical expenses, and to enjoy tax deductions and savings on their medical costs. We've done this because we recognize the public good of incentivizing people to carry adequate health insurance. Unfortunately, on the individual side, people have paid a penalty at times, having to pay taxes on the money that they use to pay their premiums, although there's some benefit there, and also their out-of-pocket medical expenses. So the bill attempts to move us in a direction of more equally treating the tax treatment of both group and individual insurance. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce my one testifier, which I did reduce the number of testifiers so that with the amount of bills that are on here, and I'll let him introduce himself.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Tyler. I'm a principal owner of Boys and Tyler Financial Group, located in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. I've been in the individual health and small group employee benefits arena professionally since 1981. This is an area that is near and dear to my heart as well, because I have so many clients with individual health plans and so forth. I also chair the Republican Healthcare Task Force for the Minnesota State Party. We are a part of the Solutions Center for the Republican Party of Minnesota. And I've chaired this since September of 2011, and also 5 years in the mid-90s, 1992 to 1997, as well as vice chair of the Republican Healthcare Task Force. Our purpose, while things are being handed out, our primary purpose is as an advisory group to the state party and to interested legislators as well. We are a multi-professional organization made up of physicians, attorneys, insurance agents, third-party administrators, and employers as well, comprising about 22 participating individuals. None of us receive any compensation at all of any kind. Everything we do is out of pocket for ourselves. We are strictly no volunteer. As part of my role as the chair of the Republican Health Task Force, and also part of my role as representing my clients, who are basically straining under the effort right now of trying to pay for individual health premiums, both from a premium standpoint and from an out-of-pocket expense standpoint. Over the last several years, we have seen the explosion of premiums and the melt-off of the quality of individual plans. In your materials on the left-hand side, it shows you a very common plan, the most common plan, it's a bronze plan, that is elected by most individuals purchasing health insurance coverage. And I highlighted a couple of items there for you, just for your attention, because this is where the state of individual health insurance is these days, primarily because of a lack of premium affordability. And with lack of a premium affordability, it lends itself to another issue, and it's what can we possibly afford to purchase, and does it meet our needs as individuals and as families. The typical bronze plan that is purchased, whether it's on the exchange or not, or off the exchange, is a $6,550 deductible for single, $13,100 deductible for family. And only after those deductibles have been met is there any kind of material insurance coverage for illness or injuries. Now, routine exams and those types of things are covered in full without a deductible, preventive care services, et cetera. I also like to point out to you that the network that this particular policy allows is an Allina system-only network. So the nature of access has also diminished substantially as well. And so this has nothing against the Allina care system at all. It's very, very large, but it is not statewide and does not meet the needs of necessarily everybody yet. In this situation, we have people having to compromise oftentimes because of premiums and lack of ability to afford, having to maximize, go to a very high deductible. The deductible for out-of-network, I just want to point this out to you, that is a separate $10,000 deductible for single and a separate $20,000 deductible per family. Now, when you look at that, you say, well, maybe that policy premium is very affordable. Maybe this is an HSA-compatible plan. Perhaps people can set aside substantial amounts of money in tax-deductible health savings account plans, except that health savings accounts only reach the maximum contribution, only reach half of the in-network deductible per year as far as maximum contributions, does not meet that situation very well. On the right-hand side of your materials is the benefit schedule for the area of the Twin Cities area, Area 8. Now, Area 8 happens to be the most cost-effective rate base. We have 9 rate categories, or rate regions, I should say, in the state of Minnesota. You'll notice that, for example, a 44-year-old would have a premium of $391 per month. And if you have a spouse of the same age, again, you add that to that. And if you have children, you go up to 0 to 20, it's $249 per month to buy a plan like that. Have 3 kids or whatever, it gets to be a pretty substantial amount. Now, these are the most cost-competitive rates in the state. If you go to southeast Minnesota, you can take these rates. By the way, this plan is not even available in the southeast of Minnesota, but if it were, the rates would be 43% higher. So we are in a state of crisis right now, both from a premium affordability standpoint and a quality of coverage affordable standpoint. Thus, getting back to what this bill is attempting to address, there are efficient ways to offer state financial assistance, and there are very inefficient ways of offering state financial assistance. The most efficient way is very simple and very straightforward and requires no additional bureaucracies, no additional employees, no additional expenses at state level, federal level, or county level. That's simply making a tax deduction on the 1040 from a state standpoint that will allow for tax deductibility of the individual policy premiums and state tax deductibility of out-of-pocket medical expenses as well. This is by no means a cure-all. This is a piece of an overall reform package. It happens to be the tax aspect of it, and I'll be sitting in front of you shortly and sometime in the near future talking about a more comprehensive approach to this. But this is an important piece and needs to be separated out because it's both health and social tax as well. One of the most inefficient ways, and on the right-hand side, is just an article that I picked up yesterday, actually, and so sorry for the poor quality but in the short time, haven't been able to actually get a better quality. But it's from Thinking Minnesota Magazine, and it's talking about using a different type of way to get financial assistance to those in need. And Minsure, of course, is the most well-known way of doing that. And this talks about how it's increasing property taxes because of increased cost to counties to administer Minsure, which is not what we quite had in mind. So as well-intended, and I do understand and appreciate how well-intended the Minsure bureaucracy has been, et cetera, but it has had a ripple financial effect throughout the state. It actually increases costs to counties, which increases costs to property tax owners our property owners, homeowners as well. Again, not quite what we had in mind for that either. So in the best interest of efficiency, getting financial assistance to people that need it, and as frankly an incentive to buy insurance, affordability is going to be key, and having the premiums and the out-of-pocket health expenses state tax deductible is a way of improving the affordability of both the care, the treatment that people receive, regardless of what deductible people have, as well as the premiums as well. It's an incentive. I mean, who wants to bypass a state tax deduction? I mean, seriously. I mean, it becomes endorsed by the state. Ronald Reagan once said that you tax something that you basically don't want more of, and you subsidize something that you want more of. And I think we want more people buying health insurance, and we don't want to tax people, which is what we're doing now, for purchasing individual health insurance, and has been that way for quite some time as a state. Also, we're in a state of flux right now as a nation as to what direction this health care and health care reform is going to be going right now. And Minnesota has always been perceived nationwide as a leader in health care and health care reform and innovation, et cetera. And I think this will set a very important precedent, provide some real leadership to the nation as to which way we should be going to help make premiums more affordable from a tax standpoint. It would be ideal, of course, if we had the same federal deduction to go along with the state deduction, but sometimes maybe the cart does come before the horse a little bit, and we can provide some leadership along those lines. So that's really the incentive of coming before you today, and thank you for the privilege of being here, and thank you, Representative Greenhagen, for bringing this important bill forward. People are truly hurting right now financially in health insurance, especially in this area, and we're trying to provide some cost relief as best we can as a state in this area. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Tyler, for your testimony this morning. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Tyler, and Representative Grunhagen. Appreciate your work on this, Representative Grunhagen and Mr. Tyler, both in committee and outside. You did pass out something with Minnesota GOP on it, and generally speaking, we try to have nonpartisan sources unless they're dealing with the parties themselves within the committee. So I think probably just to kind of understand that your work is on behalf of the policyholders and not be on behalf of the party. And I know that you know that, but you probably lost a couple votes on the other side of the table. just a guess. I don't know. But I just so for future, if you bring it back in the future, and I know you're working on this, and you have really good ideas, and you're pushing it forward. You know, one of the things that you talked about, Mr. Tyler, is incentives. And when you want more of something, you give it a tax break. When you want less of something, you tax it, as President Reagan had said. And, you know, for example, we say that there's a public good behind owning a home. So we allow mortgage interest to be deducted on taxes, and we keep track of that and send it in with our taxes by April 15th. Another way we can do that is we can provide incentives at the point of purchase. And we kind of wrestled around with that in House File 1 with how are we going to provide premium relief, whether that is going to be delivered directly to the policyholder after the fact or in a voucher form, or whether or not we're going to do that through the carrier up front at the point of purchase. And I can kind of see that this, when we're going to provide tax incentives for folks, we're going to be wrestling around with that, and I see that kind of being proposed at the federal level as well. Have you and the people that you've worked on this with thought about that and thought about maybe some off-ramps or some options about ways to deliver that for Minnesotans, either at the state level or at the federal level, through the carriers, about where we're going to be providing that incentive and how? And then how we might provide oversight to prevent waste, fraud, and abuse for how we get money back to folks.
Mr. Tyler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, to answer your question, yes, we actually have. And I think the feedback and the input is primarily towards consumer-directed health care in all its forms, and how we incent and motivate those types of vehicles. The prospect of increasing bureaucracy, I think we have learned nationwide, isn't necessarily in the best interest from an efficiency standpoint. trying to make the best use of the Internal Revenue Code that we possibly can, how we can free up the consumer, and how do we best use federal and state funds to help get the cost of insurance down so people can afford it. One thing that we do expect, we don't know, because we don't have at this moment a Health and Human Services Secretary at the federal level. But if we look at the bills that Representative Tom Price has brought forward as a U.S. representative, they are very consistent with what we're seeing here as well. The use of federal block grants to states to help finance reinsurance, for example. I think that's going to be a hot topic if it hasn't been already, for the state of Minnesota as well, to help provide the kind of federal assistance and even and possibly state assistance to help maximize the free market. And how do we most complement the free market without getting in the way of the free market and creating more and more bureaucracies, et cetera. And so I think we're going to be seeing those types of vehicles come down the pike on a federal basis. And I think the bills that we'll be probably seeing here in the very near future, I think will do their level of best to be consistent with what we expect on the federal level.
Representative Weblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, I'm glad that Representative Dean mentioned the materials that we have in front of us. But clearly you come before this committee with some partisan background, which is fine. We all do, after all. And I'd like to know whether you or the people you work with or whether you can, I don't know if you can speak for the GOP party generally, but does the GOP agree, from as far as you know, with the idea that everybody should have health care that they need at a price they can afford? Not talking about insurance now. I'm talking about the principle that everyone should have health care. Is that something we can all agree on?
Mr. Tyler.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Leland, yes, I think that is a goal we are all striving to achieve in one way or the other. And I think using the most efficient vehicles that we can come up with, will maximize that effectiveness. I think, there's a bill that was before you, I believe, just recently, for example, incenting healthcare providers through tax deductions to provide charity care, for example. There's a variety of ways of going about doing that might be insurance-related and might not be insurance-related at all. My background is, of course, in insurance, but I can certainly appreciate the value of providing good-hearted healthcare providers the incentive to step out of their sphere and donate and getting some deductions for that as an example. So yes, I think not necessarily condoning it as a right, but certainly should people have access to quality care? Most certainly.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that answer, Mr. Tyler. So, maybe this is more of a statement than I guess. I certainly think that the way we tax health care right now and the way we, the differential is certainly not fair. So, I'm certainly not opposed to this in principle. We'll have to see as it goes through taxes what it costs and all of that and if it really actually, who it benefits and who it would incentivize, if it's even enough to incentivize anyone or really help anyone. I'm just not sure about those numbers, and we're not the tax committee here, so I'm sure that Representative Gunhagen probably isn't prepared to really answer those questions. But, I just want to say that I think that the way I view the Affordable Care Act, it really was an attempt to fix a very broken insurance market. It was by no means perfect. I frankly think that the insurance market cannot be the vehicle to get us where we want to go. If the place we want to get to is making sure that everybody can access quality care at an affordable price, and if our goal is to have everyone have insurance, then I think we're locked into this complicated bureaucracy, however it's going to happen. If our goal is to get people care that they need at a price they can afford, then I don't think insurance is ever going to get us there. And, we've spent a lot of time, a lot of energy trying to get there. As you know, the U.S. House of Representatives under Republican majority has voted at least 60 times to repeal the Affordable Care Act at over quite a few years, I think about 7 years now, the GOP has been saying, we hate the Affordable Care Act, get rid of it. And now that the GOP is in charge and that we have a Republican president, we don't know, you guys don't know what to do. Well, I think that the problem is that insurance cannot be made to do what we need it to do. And, you know, we're all just tinkering around the edges here, but I suggest that you can't get less bureaucracy because the so-called free market for health insurance is never going to get us to a place where everybody has the care they need at a price they can afford. So that's my editorial comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have quite a few questions and some thoughts on this. Mr. Taylor, you made the comment that we're in a state of crisis, and I would totally agree with you wholeheartedly. But do you feel that we've done everything that can be done to contain costs other than look at state funds to buy down the cost?
Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, I think we're just scratching the surface of that discussion. I think the solutions that will be coming for you in a future bill, I think we'll do everything, I think, as much as we can do to get the cost of health insurance competitive again. And I will concur with Representative Liebling, and the other dimension of this bill is the tax deductibility of out-of-pocket expenses. So this is not entirely an insurance bill. This is actually a combination of insurance bill. There are some things that government can do to further enhance the affordability of health insurance and also access to health care from a tax standpoint as well. Unfortunately, and you know, hindsight is always, you know, crystal clear, right? But unfortunately, the drilling of a $300 to $400 million miniature bureaucracy, as we have found out, to buy health insurance, to concur with Representative Liebling, has not been the most efficient solution, to be sure. And I applaud you for approving a $300 and some million one-time financial aid to help people purchase health insurance as well, but that is, of course, one time. Now we're up to between $600 and $700 million, pushing $1 billion here, kind of throwing it at a better problem. I would suggest that there are probably more strategically efficient ways to use that money to help people access health care, whether it be through insurance or however it might be delivered, absolutely. But we're kind of, you know, learning as we go along, making mistakes as we go along. They're very well intended, no doubt. The Affordable Care Act was very well intended. But unfortunately, we're finding out that the consequences of it were largely unanticipated and quite devastating, unfortunately, to real moms and pop families out there. So this is just a very small piece of it. But to answer your question, no, I don't think this is all. I think there's much more that can be done.
Representative Hasted.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Would you agree that the situation we are facing today was set into motion well before the ACA or MNSHR came into the picture? The rising cost of health care, we've had a conversation for years and years about what these drivers are, usage, and all. That's just one of many things. My concern is that we're not getting to the heart of the problem. We are putting what we call Band-Aids and on the problem. We're trying to help the people affected. This smacks of House File 1, where we were dealing with people in a very dire situation, and we were all working together to find the best solution to meet the immediate need. But now what this bill is doing is virtually the same thing, but it's in my opinion, reaching a larger pool of people because the cost of health insurance is affecting everybody. And I definitely want to find a solution for that. I don't know that using state funds just to buy down the cost in any format is the solution. I think we really have to look at what's driving it and how do we get at that. And I would rather use this money to get at the heart of what the problem is, personally.
Thank you, Representative Sandstead. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. And I don't have much to add after Representative Sandstead. But just this, the Affordable Care Act was, you know, was built on the status quo system. And underneath that status quo system, we've seen the continuation of the various participants in healthcare, all the interests that are in healthcare continuing to do what they do, right? And we're seeing a lot of cost escalation in terms of insurance and cost shifting to consumers and employers who cover people, cost shifting to consumers and drug costs going up, and those are getting cost shifted to consumers. And by passing this bill, we just continue the inflation in healthcare because we're not dealing with the root of the problem. We're just trying to solve it temporarily. And while I know we're not in the tax committee and this is not a popular issue, when we passed the provider tax, I wasn't a legislator at the time, but when Minnesota passed the provider tax back in 1992, it was intended to rein in costs because we were taxing the very thing that was growing. And for many people within the healthcare industry at the time, they understood that healthcare costs were the real issue that we were trying to solve and we needed to do more to contain them. That's why, in the end, Governor Carlson and others supported that mechanism. So I do think that as a legislature, we have got to get to the root of the problem, just as Representative Sandstead is articulating, which is cost and the cost for consumers, but also the cost of the system as a whole. And I don't think that this bill does that. While I understand it provides relief for individuals, it doesn't drive us to a solution that is going to rein in costs overall in the aggregate, and that's the hard work that we have to do.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tyler, let's say somebody is struggling to pay their monthly bills. And if this bill were passed and signed today, what would this do to reduce that person's monthly premium, say, in March?
Mr. Tyler.
Thank you. It would provide us an incentive to help them afford that at a time they would file their tax returns. It would not do it immediately like an advanced premium tax credit. It would be a delayed effect after they file their taxes. And just to Representative Sandstead and Representative Murphy's comments there, just to reiterate and ask your question, yes, the system that we're struggling with right now was put into motion years ago. In fact, in my experience and my observation, the 1973 HMO Act passed by a Democratic Congress and signed by a Republican president started in motion a level of utilization that has not been contained since that time. The expectations of health insurance became quite different at that point, from catastrophic insurance coverage to everyday maintenance type of thing. The utilization patterns actually have escalated since that point in time. And as a country, we've been struggling to contain that. The repeal and replace discussion that's going on at the federal level right now, the repeal can happen, but in my opinion, the replace belongs right here. In Minnesota, we did not have an issue with uninsured people and a lack of affordability and poor quality plans before the ACA was passed. The employer and individual marketplaces, we had the fourth best rates in the country, and we had among the most competitive plans. So much of the Minnesota Care legislation and some of the tweaks that have been made since that time actually worked very well. And as things have played out nationally, Minnesota became an actual model of excellence for both care, quality, and affordability. Even though we had the highest level of state mandates for health insurance, 68 at the time, we still had the fourth best rates in the country. So as a state, I also say that in 1976, the legislature passed the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Insurance Association for high-risk individuals. That was unique in the country, by the way, and much of the model that you'll be seeing coming up in subsequent legislation before you is actually a takeoff of the old MCHA plan that was nixed and taken out because of the Affordable Care Act. Minnesota did a lot of things right. I'm not saying we had a corner on the market and doing everything right, but as a national model, we absolutely had the best game going in town, in the country, frankly. And I think what we're trying to do is just provide as much relief as we can on a permanent basis to people struggling to pay premiums and struggling to pay out-of-pocket expenses. That's all this is trying to do. This is not a cure-all. This is maybe just a Band-Aid, but right now, there are wounds that need healing, and this will be part of it.
And Mr. Tyler, we have four more bills and 45 more minutes, so we have a series of other members who have questions, so if you could keep your answers a little bit more succinct. Representative Cagle, any follow-up?
Well, I guess then just, you know, if you don't have the money to pay your bill today, then a tax refund 12 months from now doesn't really do you any good. And I was one of those people who actually was affected by pre-ACA. I have a pre-existing condition. I was denied health care at every turn, and luckily enough was able to get onto a COBRA, but I couldn't pay for it. I'm very fortunate enough to have family support, but if I didn't, I would have been uninsured with a serious physical condition. So I'm thankful.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, we all, I don't think anyone on this committee doesn't want to get to nirvana somewhere in the future of where everybody can get the health care they want and the quality. And I think some of the digression to nitpicking over the past or the transition doesn't gain us anything. We've got a job, and the job is House File 1, multiple parties said we had to do something quick because it was a crisis for people. Wasn't perfect, but we did it. So let's move on to our next step, which is what is the intermediate between nirvana and here? And we need to listen to all the options because that might give us an idea of how we can put this together. So we need to, you know, stop the, you know, I get, it's not bickering, but we need to look at what are the options because, true, Minnesota was a leader. We were one of the first states with HMOs. We created a lot of options. We had the fewest unemployed, I think, in the nation. And a third of those unemployed, they qualified for government programs that we had, MCHA. We had reinsurance that Alaska and others have tried to copy because it was so, you know, it was a good program. So let us look at what we did great before. Let us listen to these options that are presented to us in these bills and come together and put together a good intermediary one. And, you know, Minnesota has the best chance of reaching nirvana, but let's focus on the job before us.
Representative Stansted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two quick things, and I do not mean this in a manner of bickering, but you made a statement that we did not have a problem in Minnesota before the ACA as far as coverage, and I respectfully disagree with you. I'm a teacher. I saw my students and their families. This is a real issue, and it's been an issue for a long time, and it's spiraling out of control rapidly. And to Mr. Representative Quam's statements, I agree with you. We do have a task before us. Members, I just would like to caution us that we have a limited pot of money with which to work. And I think, my, again, personal opinion is we would be better off spending money if we're going to in trying to find a solution for all Minnesotans and not just trying to fix and put a mandate on a situation that's it's bad. But it's not the same crisis we dealt with completely in the other situation. I would rather get to the heart of fixing it than just putting Band-Aids on. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify for or against House File 155? Seeing none, Representative Grunhagen, final word.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the discussion. Just bringing it back to the intent of the bill, the intent is to bring the state tax code on a more equal basis for both group and individual health insurance. If you want answers to some of the rest of the questions that were raised, I would encourage you to read my book, which I wrote shortly after the ACA was passed, Healthcare in Crisis, Is Government the Solution or the Problem? If you don't want to read the book, I'll just tell you the four problems that are driving up healthcare: government mandates, government regulations, government taxes, and government bureaucracy. And the fifth is underpayment of medical services by government that cost shift and drive our individual health insurance premiums up. If we don't repeal the ACA and implement private sector solutions, we are going to wind up with a two-tier health insurance services or health care industry in this state, one for the rich and the privileged, and the connected, and a second-rate one for the rest of us. I pray that we don't go that direction and we go back to the private sector market that has given us so many blessings in this country. I could talk for an hour, but...
And with that, the news, House File 155, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion is adopted, and House File 155, as amended, is re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen, and thank you, Mr. Tyler, for your testimony this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Next up, we have House File 529, Representative Zerwas. And as Representative Zerwas makes his way down with his testifiers, I will move that House File 529 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Representative Zerwas, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and give us your testimony. And present your bill, actually.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I don't know what is now an appropriate time to mention that I also have a book for sale? The Gift of an Open Heart. It's available on Amazon. Figure between Kellyanne Conway and the last bill, we're all giving commercials today. House File 529, Mr. Chair.
To your bill.
We're talking about interactive case management and doing video visiting to cut down on costs for counties that have persons that are receiving services that are placed out of the county. This bill came to us from Blue Earth County and is strongly supported by MICA, MAXA, and AMC. If the bill sounds familiar, we've passed it the last few sessions, both out of the House and Senate, and there were always some concerns with the department. After some negotiations, we think we're ready to get this done to make it a little bit easier and save some costs for the counties. The bill allows the use of interactive video services for certain case management services. It's very similar to telemedicine. It would allow counties to be reimbursed for direct case management activities when using the ITV or the video conferencing. Many human services clients are being served outside of their county of financial responsibility. So we have instances where counties in southern Minnesota might have a juvenile or another individual that's being housed up in St. Louis County. And currently, they're being required to send a county official physically up there for sometimes a 2 or 3 minute visit to check in with that person and then come back. The bill would be a huge benefit to greater Minnesota and counties that have to drive long distances into either the metro area or some of our rural population centers where this is. Now, last year, counties worked with DHS and came up with language that is pretty limited in scope. The person receiving the targeted case management services utilizing this ITV or this video conferencing, they would have to be in a setting that is staffed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So they're being supervised and monitored constantly outside of these check-ins. It has to be ruled that ITV is in the best interest of the person and is deemed appropriate by the person receiving the services, the person's legal guardian, the case management provider, so the county, and the provider operating the setting where the person is residing. So all those folks need to be on the same page that this is in the best interest of the client. Of course, the client can refuse or opt out of ITV at any time, and the use of ITV is approved as a part of the person's written personal care or case plan. And then the upper limit is that ITV can only be used for up to, but not more than, 50% of the minimum required face-to-face visits. So if a person opts into ITV, it's not like their county of financial responsibility is going to send them off on their own, but will still be every other check-in at a minimum will be in person. And then finally, all of this is subject to federal waiver, although there are other states that have been approved. With me today is Angela Youngerberg, Director of Business Operations from Blue Earth County, who can provide some additional testimony.
Ms. Youngerberg, welcome back to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Angela Youngerberg. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am the Director of Business Operations for Blue Earth County Human Services, testifying today on behalf of MICA, MAXA, and AMC. Thank you for the opportunity to hear this bill. This bill, as Representative Zerwas has indicated, is regarding case management. It's a topic that's near and dear to my heart and is at the heart of what county services provide. Many years ago, when I started my first job, I was a case manager. I didn't know at that time that social work meant that I would learn and become a skilled navigator of Minnesota roads. So I've had the benefit of traveling all over the state to see people that I worked with for case management services. The windshield time was unexpected, however. I did see a lot of people in skilled facilities with skilled services, and when stable, this was often a 20 to 30 minute meeting. So if you can imagine driving to Duluth or to Brainerd or to other areas across the state for a 20 to 30 minute meeting, it was always good to see the person. Now from my vantage point as in human services as a director, I can see this practice from a different angle. I'm here to tell you some good news and some troubling news. The good news is case management is well in hand, producing substantial positive outcomes for people, and it's helping people. The troubling news is in a time where there are huge advancements in technology, we are not using it to the fullest extent to practice smarter. In a time where entire generations expect technology to enhance relationships, as my 3, 8, and 11-year-old children tell me all the time, that they use technology for relationships, we are not evolving our services to the needs of current and the next generations. Today, we're here to ask for your support for this bill, that it adds options, it does not replace any existing type of service. It only enhances how it's delivered. It's a place to start, and that we've worked with the Department of Human Services on this language. From Blue Earth County's perspective, we have a proven track record of using this technology, although not for case management because it is not yet allowed. It is allowed in the delivery of other mental health services, such as psychiatry. We are building our infrastructure in our region, as are other regions across the state, and this would allow those regions to utilize that infrastructure. In our mental health center, we see 200 to 300 people per month by the use of this technology. The no-show rate for these services are substantially lower, indicating increased consumer satisfaction with this. Traditionally, no-show rates for this service are 20 to 25% when we use video technology. It has been as low as 2%, but averages about 7% no-show rate. I have no concerns that video interaction would be unacceptable in terms of establishing meaningful relationships for case management. And I am told from facilities that they would be willing to work with counties with higher need individuals if there were more opportunity for this type of video interaction, which could happen more frequently than a face-to-face visit could. And this would assist in moving people out of the AMRTC and CBHH system. So we see it as an enhancement. The cost, there's no funding infrastructure as part of this bill. It's a county cost if counties want to do this. This is not a mandated or required option. To give you an idea about cost, we can bring this technology on for about $250 per unit, which is the equivalent of what I would pay one of my case managers to drive to Duluth for the day. Small and rural counties are dependent on this change, as their experts are often gone for days to travel to do a visit. In closing, human services as a discipline needs a technology platform from which to grow. The state of Minnesota has the ability to do so with policy changes, and local counties can then reinvest their resources to make this happen. But without a policy change, we cannot go down this path. Other states are already using video technology beyond where we are in Minnesota. I urge you to allow Minnesota to remain a policy leader in social service delivery systems. To take this baby step, which is years overdue, I ask for your support of this bill, which would potentially open doors for Minnesota to engage its responsibility in blending services and technology to best meet the needs of Minnesotans. Again, thank you to Representative Zerwas for your leadership with this bill, and I sincerely thank all of the committee members this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Youngerberg, for your testimony this morning. Are there questions for this testifier, Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one question as you talk about this piece of legislation as a step and urging us to lead. What would you advise us that we need to do to be the leader that you would want us to be on this issue that's important for Minnesota?
So, Ms. Youngerberg.
Thank you. The first step with this is introducing this to certain forms of case management, not all forms of case management. So this is really restricted to working with adults in facilities. Although we do have requests from individuals to be able to use this technology from their homes, we have requests from facilities to use this technology with children. But we know that policy development can take time and that we need some steps to establish the credibility of the use of this technology. So seeing how we use technology across all areas of our life, this would just take that one step further and hopefully down the years establish this as a viable option for conducting case management and social work practices and expanding the reach of this to different populations in years to come.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I think this is a good bill. Let me just say that first. But I need to understand, and maybe you stated something that I'm going to ask you. If you did, forgive me. But this is a request to use video with patients who have been moved from institutions into the community. That's the first question.
Ms. Youngerberg.
Yes, it may be used for individuals who have been in institutions and are in the community. A person can end up in many different living situations in the community. They may or may not have had to go through an institution to get to that living setting. So because this is focused in on adults, as a person ages and they move out of their home into their own living situation, it may or may not be independent or in a group living facility setting, and that may or may not include a stay at any type of hospital or institution. So this does not restrict that a person must have gone through and stayed at an institution or a hospital before the use of this. It's just anyone living in a group supervised setting.
Representative Moran.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So it doesn't clarify for me. So they're in a group setting, in an institutional setting, or I guess my question is, I was just wondering if they were in their own home or in a community setting, if the video equipment was not there, you know, how would they get access to the equipment?
Ms. Youngerberg.
So there's a couple of different ways that we can access this video technology. There are multiple platforms from which to use. In Blue Earth County, we utilize two different platforms, one of which is hardwired, hard technology, another is app-based. And counties can choose what option they want to use with this. All counties in the state of Minnesota have access to the kind of hardware version of this technology. And we've been moving more of the software application into other settings. So, for example, in the 10-county region in which I live and work, we have over 40 sites that people can go to. For some people, it's within their group home. For some people, if they live independently, it's down the block at either the county service agency or another agency. This technology can be put on an iPad. We have used this technology in moving vehicles before, actually. So it's very, very mobile technology, depending on which application the county or region would decide to use. So it can be very individualized.
Thank you.
Representative Moran.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions for the testifier? Seeing none, is there anyone else who wishes to testify for or against House File 529? Seeing none, final word, Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just want to thank Micah, Maxon, AMC, and the department for continuing to work on the language and getting something that's streamlined enough and focused enough where I'm pretty confident that we'll be able to get it done this year.
All right. With that, I renew my motion that House File 529 be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and House File 529 is referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Representative Zerwas, thank you. Next, we have House File 518. Representative Zerwas, I will move House File 518 be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Representative Zerwas, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 518 is also a bill that we saw last year that was passed out of both the House and Senate. The bill addresses the shortage of home care nurses in Minnesota, specifically addressing the critical shortage in pediatric home care nursing. That shortage is due in large part to much lower pay rates than hospitals can offer ICU level nurses. By designating a home a complex pediatric home care nursing as a separate category within home care nursing, we're acknowledging the growth in the skilled clinician necessary in providing skilled nursing within some of these home settings. And so what we have is we have homes that have basically ICU rooms within the home care setting. And so we need to train ICU level practitioners and nurses to staff these facilities. That's often very difficult to do, as we heard the last several years. And so these children often go from directly from a pediatric intensive care unit one day and then back into their homes the next. The level of medical technology and the care that these nurses provide would surprise a lot of us. I know Chair Dean and a few of us have been able to do some visits, but you'll walk into either a living room or a bedroom, and you will see an ICU room in these folks' homes, oftentimes with full ventilators, with suction equipment, and a full accompaniment of medical equipment. What this level does is it sets up the ability in the future to set up a pay rate to acknowledge this level of skilled nursing that's occurring within the home care setting, and that will get to the point to address the recruitment issue that these providers are having. It's a challenge when you're trying to recruit ICU level nurses out of a very busy and challenging ICU and say, come to work for us in our living room with no other coworkers, no hospital setting. It's a real challenge to get nurses to go there. And the hope is that a bump in the rate could be an incentive to attract and retain those qualified nurses. Now, this isn't the Finance Committee, but I'll just touch on briefly. We can take care of a child on MA. We can take care of them in their home with their family at about a third of the cost to MA than we do in an ICU room. And we can also do that by recruiting these nurses and keep the families together. So this is a win-win. This makes sense financially, and this makes sense for families. Unfortunately, the advocates for this bill are actually in Washington, D.C. Today, meeting with their congressional delegation, and so we don't have any testimony from some patient families today, but I can try to answer some questions. With that, Chair, that's what I have.
All right. Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, are there questions for the bill author? Seeing none, final word, Representative Zerwas.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, just to talk just briefly. So I spent about 6 months, it was 5.5 months, in the ICU at Children's when I was 15. And I was lucky. My mom had a business that she was able to contract out her cleaning service, and so another person took up her buildings to do the cleaning, and we wheeled in a bed, and she set up camp, and she stayed there for 5.5 months. And, you know, it was the toughest 5.5 months that I've ever been through. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But we made it through because our family, and our family stayed together. My dad worked as the police chief at the time, and the city council was nice enough to say, you know what, you need to be with your family. And so we paid for, and my parents paid for, a phone line and a fax line in the hospital room, and get a little desk set up in the corner. And so he'd get there about 7 in the morning, and he'd stay till about 10 o'clock at night, and then he'd go back to Elk River and pick up and drop off paperwork and be back the next morning. And that's what we made it work. And then that spring, when it was pretty obvious I wasn't going to get the heart transplant, we decided there wasn't much else we could do at the hospital. And so we went home. I went home with IVs and a nurse and kind of that care. And that's what this bill is about. This bill is about keeping families together and keeping parents with their kids. It's the right thing to do for the kids. It's the right thing to do for the parents. And as we look at the cost differential, what we can do in someone's home versus an ICU rate, it's also the right thing to do for the budget and for taxpayers. And so I know we've tried this bill a few times in the past, and we always have trouble with the fiscal note, but it's something that I'm really going to be committed to and working hard on this session. I hope to have your support. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd ask you to renew your motion.
With that, I will renew my motion that House Bill 518 be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and House File 518 is referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Next up, I will move House File 351. Representative Hertaus, if you can make your way down. And I will request that House File 351, I will move that House File 351 be referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Representative Hertaus, when you are ready, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greetings and members. House File 351 is a bill that's authorizing certain exclusions of revenue received by the Hennepin County Medical Center, also known as HCMC, from Minnesota's 2% provider tax. Now, although HCMC is a county hospital, it's also emerged as a premier Trauma One hospital center, not only for our region, but the entire Upper Midwest, including transfer patients from our area hospitals as well as neighboring states. In fact, HCMC over the decades has been consistently training 50% of our Minnesota physicians with internships, also having different accredited programs, including trainings for colleges and universities, and also for our first responders, police and fire statewide. Even 3 decades ago, when I worked as a coronary care nurse in the Metro Twin Cities, HCMC emerged, or it didn't emerge, but it already was established well as the premier Trauma One center in our area and in our region. Now, you may have noticed recently in the paper there's been some articles about the budgetary struggle that HCMC is facing, and it had a significant operating loss in 2016. HCMC is in the process of reducing some of these expenses, including reducing some of its employment. HCMC has a much higher public payer mix than most hospitals in our area, in our region. The typical hospital receives about 25% of its revenue from Medicare and Medicaid reimbursements. This is not the situation with our asset that we have here in Hennepin County. It receives about 75% of all of its revenues come from Medicare and Medicaid payments. So at this time, I'd like to introduce Mr. Purcell, who is a county attorney with Hennepin County, and he's got a few comments he'd like to say.
Mr. Purcell, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tom Purcell. I'm an assistant county attorney, and I'm here to speak in support of House File 351. This bill would exempt certain supplemental payments from taxation. The supplemental payments are payments that exist to help offset the disproportionate costs of running HCMC, which you just heard Representative Hertzog speak about. That includes the cost of uninsured payments, patients receiving benefits from public programs, the cost of operating a teaching hospital, and one that also does research, and is recognized as a premier safety net hospital here in the state. These supplemental payments are intended to offset those additional costs, and by design, they recognize that an institution like HCMC will struggle to meet margins. Of course, medical assistance payments, which comprise a huge part of HCMC's case mix, are insufficient to cover costs. Medicaid currently covers about 70% of the cost to treat patients at HCMC. And because the volume is so significant, HCMC is actually designated and recognized by the Department of Human Services and the Medicaid State Plan as a critical safety net hospital. The provider tax, of course, is a 2% tax on gross revenues, and HCMC pays that tax. What we're talking about here, the payments, the taxability of these supplemental payments, is a small fraction of the amount that HCMC pays in provider tax. The provider tax rules were changed in 2004 to include taxability of revenues from medical assistance, general assistance, Medicare, and MinnesotaCare. And as part of that change, rates to providers were increased 2% to make the tax payments neutral. But for some reason, the supplemental payments were not increased 2%, and as a result, this tax erodes the supplemental payments, which are intended to for a public benefit. And I understand, by the way, that the fiscal notes for the provider tax and the surcharge never showed revenue from supplemental payments at the time, and therefore we do not believe that supplemental payments were ever intended to be included in the tax. So House File 351 is intended to add an exclusion from gross revenue in that tax. There's a long list of them in the statute before you. And I hope that as a going forward matter, you will exempt these supplemental payments from taxability under the 2% tax. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Purcell, for your testimony. Are there questions for the testifier, Mr. Purcell? Seeing none, the committee thanks you for your testimony this morning. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House File 351? Seeing none, are there any questions for the bill author? Really? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, when you said, really, I just, you know, didn't want to disappoint you.
Truly caring.
So the question I have is, how does this fit in with the proposed sunset of the provider tax? Is this bill, Representative Hertzog, is this assuming that we're not going to sunset the provider tax?
Well, I would view it as a backstop, just in case that doesn't happen.
Representative Liebling?
Thank you. And of course, we're not the fiscal committee, but is there an estimate of what the cost of this might be, just even a ballpark?
Representative Hertzog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling, I guess based on the percentages and knowing that HCMC's budget is around $500-600 million, that the entire revenue is, if you took 75% of that as Medicare and Medicaid payments, it's probably around $1 million. I was doing the math, because if you took 400 million times 2%, it'd be about 800,000. So I was close.
Thank you.
And thank you, Representative Woodling, for not disappointing. With any final words, Representative Hertaus?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to reiterate that HCMC really truly is a statewide resource and a statewide asset. And I want to remind everybody that not only is it doing the things that I talked about earlier, but it's also has one of the largest of only two critical burn units in the entire state. It's also the home of the Minnesota Poison Control Center, which the entire state uses, and even our neighboring states do use. And it also has a 24/7 hyperbaric chamber, which is unique to the area. And it's also the backbone of the emergency disaster system and preparedness system for healthcare in our region. So it is truly a hospital that is one of the highest in the United States that has this high mix of Medicaid, Medicare payments. And because it is really an asset of regional significance, I just feel strongly that this should not be solely on the backs of Hennepin County taxpayers, because of that 70% reimbursement rate. If you add another 2% that you take off of that, that's reducing the reimbursement to 68%. So I hope that we can get this done. Thank you very much.
With that, I will renew my motion that House File 351 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and House File 351 is re-referred to Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. Thank you, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you.
Members, the final bill today is House File 656. Representative Lucero, if you can make your way down. As you're making your way, I will move that House File 656 be re-referred to Committee on Taxes. Representative Lucero, when you are ready, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today and present this bill. Mm-hmm. So in the last several years, this committee is well aware of the hardships that health insurance premiums have unfortunately inflicted on Minnesotans all across the state, so I wanted to put together a bill that would continue to help with the easing the burden that Minnesotans are facing. So what this bill will do will allow Minnesotans to be able to write off on their taxes the health insurance premiums that they currently pay. Ooh. That's that simple, Mr. Chair.
Do you have any testifiers, Representative Lucero?
I do not.
All right. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, questions for the author. Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and to the author. And just echoing what we talked about before, if we're going to give some tax preferential treatment in terms of health care and premium relief, it seems to me that an advanced premium tax credit would make more sense than a deduction.
Is that a question? Representative Lucero.
Is that a question? Or?
Sure.
Representative Murphy. Representative Lucero.
I'm open to all ideas for tax credits, tax deductions to bring relief to Minnesotans.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lucero, I think House File 870 is a refundable tax credit for those in the individual market. You might want to look at that.
Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Sarah, I just wanted to be really clear. This is really the same as the Grunhagen bill that we heard, except it's a little more limited in that it's just for the premiums. Am I right in understanding that?
Representative Sarah.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for the bill author? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 656 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and House File 656 is referred to taxes. Thank you, Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
This morning. And members, with that, we will adjourn, and we will come back at 8:15 on Tuesday.